The royal owners of these graves were buried with magnificent carved jades, fine bronze vessels, many weapons, and numerous clay vessels. One boasted of no less than 59 decapitated victims laid out in 11 rows. In death, as in life, the Shang elite were surrounded by the bodies of people sacrificed in honor of their ancestors. As many as 600 under one house alone. This was a form of despotic, ruthless authority where everything was subordinated to the ruler, his desires, and his ritual role as an intermediary between the living, the dead, and the gods. What exactly did the Shang rulers do? They were ritual specialists, in all probability. They probably thought of themselves and were validated as the sole intermediaries between the people, the ancestors, and the gods. They supervised the most important rituals, which unfolded within the royal precincts, among them ceremonial divinations and ancestor worship. And this ancestor worship probably involved human sacrifice, a lot of it. Like the Longshanoid rulers, Shang kings used animal bone shoulder blades to pose questions to the ancestors, who in turn would intercede with the gods. Tens of thousands of these inscribed bones have survived. The divinations, like those of the Longshanoid, made with a heated implement. And the cracks are the divine responses. But unlike the Longshanoid shoulder blades, here both the questions and the answers are inscribed on the shoulder blade. It's clear that an expert priest could control the direction of the cracks and use them as a powerful means of giving advice. Because, as is obvious, in any situation like this, a diviner is in a very delicate position. He treads a fine line between giving a monarch the answer he wants and telling the truth. But it's clear that this institution lasted for many centuries. And here again, the Shang are distinctive from the earlier Longshanoid peoples because they used a writing system of short inscriptions so effective that it endured in a much modified form to become the foundation of modern Chinese scripts, which is why we can read the inscriptions on shoulder blades. Putting all this evidence together, it's clear that the Xia and Shang states, and the Shu as well, centered on the ruler and the royal lineage, with its links to divine ancestors. It was essentially a feudal organization. Local lords under the rulers swore loyalty to the Shang king, but sometimes were at war one with another. Some of the oracle bones go as far as to refer to an inner capital and an outer domain. In political terms, the Shang realm was obviously much smaller than the area of Shang cultural influence, as was the case with the Harappan in India and Pakistan. Clearly, the area of cultural influence and the area of political control were different, and at different times, the area of effective political control would extend far to the south, and other times, perhaps as a result of wars on the periphery of the area of main influence, it would shrink again. Something is worth mentioning here as a theme, which we're going to come back to with the Maya, and we're going to come back to it with the Khmer states of Southeast Asia, and that is the notion of the center and the periphery. In many pre-industrial states, and the sharing of a good example. The periphery of the kingdom changed constantly, even being under the control of a semi-autonomous lord.